Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the off-season, if there's such a thing, of the WNBL and NBL. It's the Brad and Body Podcast. Hello, Bottom. How are you, my friend?
I'm extraordinary. Thank you for your very, very kind inquiry. Looking forward to today's guest.
Yeah,
because he was the very first player that we interviewed on our pro.
Correct. So, we thought Body and I spoke and said, we'd be off air until Paris comes around and stuff. But then we thought we'd go back and do some, past players and now ex-players. He was our first ever player. But now we're bringing back a person that has just retired after 327 games, 11 seasons in the WNBL. When you think about it,
NBL.
When you think about it, sorry about that. Don't let the W get in the way. But when you think about it, he finished in for the Crocodiles in 2007, was away, I think, 9-10 years, and then came back as the Sydney Kings. And he still played 327 games. He's an absolute legend. Everyone loves him. Brad Newley, welcome to the show yet again. Fantastic season, mate, and fantastic career. How are you feeling?
Yeah, thanks, Brad and Boddy. It's feeling pretty good. I've been really flat out since in the last 2 weeks. I reckon I've played, of the 14 days, I've golfed on 10 of them. So, my wife's suffering at home in the school holidays with the kids, and I've just been a bit of time on the course, sprinkled in with some NBL one, of course. But, very relaxed at the moment and looking forward to going on a big holiday soon.
Well, let's start with the biggest question that everyone wants to know. Brad Newley, 11 seasons in the NBL, 327 games, but you were away for 10 years. Mate, you could have been 700 games in the NBL and you've been an amazing player. What does it feel like retired? How are you feeling?
Yeah, retirement probably took me about, I'm probably going to get a bit serious here, but I made this kind of speech at our end of season awards night a couple of weeks ago. And, we'd just come off the loss and things were pretty grim. And, we were a bit down and, we'd missed the championship and that kind of stuff. So the room was already a bit dull at the start. And I guess it took me about a year to retire. I actually worked with a professional to help me come to grips with my career in retirement. And the biggest thing I took out of it was you're at your happiest when you're content with what you've done. And I basically worked myself into a space where I've always been very hard on myself and what I've done in my career. And I think that's kept me going for so long, because I've always wanted to get a little bit better, a bit better. And I guess in a professional organization, when you're not trying to get better anymore and you're content, you can't really go any further, if that makes sense. So I kind of had to deal with the fact that I've got myself to a level now. And I was content with where I was at. And, that meant not really getting to play a lot this year. And, Dean knew a little bit about who I was working with, and I knew my role going into the season. So I was kind of content not to be a major minute player, but to be more of an off-court role. And that's kind of what I worked with my guy about, was how to be happy with that role and kind of no matter what happens with the results, just to be, happy with what I've done. And it took me a while to get to that state of my career, 20 years it took. But, I'm happily retired now and, just looking forward to the next phase of my life. So, a little bit of an inside look at what it took to retire. It wasn't just like a snap decision. But, it was all about trying to be content with what I've done. And anyone who knows me quite personally, I've always been very hard on myself. So even though I've played for 20 years, been to Olympics and all these kind of things, I've always wanted to be better. So I guess that kept me going for the longest part. But at the same time, it can eat away at you a little bit if you never sit back and look what you've done and enjoy it. So I'm doing a lot of that at the moment and, just enjoying family life and moving on.
So just talking about this last year you had with Melbourne United, so you knew going in that yours would be more a training day, a mentoring role, that sort of capacity to help this team be as good as it could be. You knew that going in?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we hadn't got a lot of guys missing in the preseason, so I was already in Melbourne, and I knew, I had an idea that I wasn't going to play much, and basically did a lot of the preseason. was pretty important for them because we had a lot of new players, just helping them out, getting used to the city and how Dean trains and things like that. I was kind of like a fifth coach in a way, but while I still played, I had my gold squad. We were like our third team with the young guys. We had a bit of fun beating up on the main guys during the week. That was always fun.
Always the best times.
I probably had a line in the sand moment where Chris I was getting pretty worked up, and I thought maybe there was the old me crept in and thought maybe I should be playing a bit more. And Chris pulled me aside and said, "You need to stop being a dickhead, mate, because you know this. It's good having you around here, but if you're affecting practice and that, it's not good." So I kind of had a bit of a reflection day, and basically from that moment onwards, it was earlier in the year, and I just enjoyed the rest of the year, and yeah, really got used to it, and that's working with my psychologist too. That helped as well. So, yeah, basically knew that I wasn't going to play a lot during the season, and maybe I got a bit excited that there's a few injuries. I might have got a bit more minutes, but right. Just dealing with that was a little bit tough. But yeah, I always knew that my dream was to go out with a championship. We fell a little bit short, but I won't let 2 points define what I've done.
No way.
Well, look, we really appreciate your candor on that, Brad. That's brilliant. But you've always been like that. That's probably why you're such a popular bloke. The question I have for you is, you grew up in Adelaide, you spent time in Canberra, you got recruited to Townsville, came back Sydney, now Melbourne. Where do you now settle? Do you settle down in Melbourne? Do you come home to Adelaide? Do you go back up to Townsville? Where will you be raising your family?
Well, that's a funny question. Like, you know, you knew my father growing up. He was in the bank, and he moved me and my sister. I think we lived in 3 states or something through our schooling and all that kind of stuff. So I've kind of always been used to not really having one set home. And, you know, I've always worked or played basketball for my kids and family, and they've gone where I've gone, basically. And when I signed here in Melbourne, initially it was a 1-year deal, but we thought, you know, if it goes well, we could end up here. And at the moment, we've settled here in Melbourne. My wife's teaching at a local primary school, Bridget. So she's gone out and got work for herself now, which is pretty cool. And, you know, I've just I've got a job now with Melbourne United in a different aspect. So we're in Melbourne for at least the short term, I think, buddy.
Yeah. Let's just go on with that. You've just said you've got a job with Melbourne United, so that's life after retirement. Can you talk a little bit about that role?
Yeah, well, I just learned what my role is. A commercial executive, if that makes sense. So, okay. Wow. Yeah, so I no longer get up in the morning and put on ankle tape and shoes and training gear. I get up in the morning and put on a pair of slacks. So I got to get down to Gazmed and get my wardrobe in order. men's club, if you're listening, I'll be in soon.
I want to see Mark in the men's club. I'm telling you, that guy
He's good. He looked after me for
so
the dinner.
Times. Yeah, he's fantastic.
So, yeah, it'll be a bit of a different change up. So it's part of my role there is working with sponsorship and getting people on board, and another part of it is in the community too. So I've been working with a couple of schools here in Melbourne at the same time, so that kind of will fill my days out for the short term. And then there's a game day role once the season rolls around. So I'm pretty excited about that one. It's actually something that I think I can really bring to the table is, you know, sitting with corporates and things like that, teaching them about the game and that kind of stuff and who the matchups are and getting them a bit of a behind-the-scenes look of what it's like to be a professional basketballer.
You'll be amazing at it. Brad, I want to go on more about this coming to terms with retirement. As someone remembering retirement over 20 years ago, man, I struggled. And there was no such thing as go and talk to someone. It just wasn't spoken about. When you said that, I was getting goosebumps to think that is just so, A, amazing that you're telling us that. B, the situation of what it must have been like for you, because you know, you've got a gorgeous family and Bridget, Beth, Charlie, like that, all, you know, where are we going to live? All the things that come into it. Just go a little bit deeper. I'm so intrigued how you get to that position and what makes you think, yeah, this is what I need.
Yeah, as far as seeing, getting some help with the psych stuff and that. I think, I wanted to take into the fact that, you know, once you are retired, it's a long time. And with sportsmen, like I'm not even 40 yet. And in my world, which I've been in the last 20 years, I'm a grandpa. So what I need to is in reality, a lot of my friends now are coming into their jobs, getting into the start of their professions where I'm kind of coming towards the end of it. And I've been lucky enough with my career. I played in some nice countries and that where I was able to set myself up really well off the court. So I guess coming to terms with retirement from a financial thing wasn't really the biggest stress, if that makes sense. It was more just the how I go about, you know, you're not really, when you go to school now, you're just, you know, dad from around the corner. You're not dad from Melbourne United or that, you know, you're just another one of the guys, which I think I've slowly gotten used to since we've moved here to Melbourne. I kind of, it's the area where we live, there's a lot of ex-sportsmen around, and we all kind of see things the same. And I think that's really helped my adjustment a little bit too. And with the psych stuff, yeah, once again, he just kind of pushed it back on being happy. And, you know, if you come at home, say I'm still chasing those contracts, I'm not playing minutes, and I'm coming home and I'm bringing that home into the family environment, I'm angry. I'm the leader of the house. If I'm creating an angry house, it's not a very fun environment to be in. So that's why I seek a bit of help to try and get better. Then it's still a work in progress. I still get grumpy. Don't get me wrong. But I think
you've always been a little bit grumpy, Brett.
Yeah. You got to play with a bit of an edge. You probably don't need to live with a bit of an edge. Play with an edge. So you're learning how to live without the edge is probably the next step.
But that's what makes you as well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's where it's an interesting one. And I love the fact that you're sharing it.
Yeah.
I think that this is something like someone like you should be doing that for the NBL guys.
Yeah. I spoke a little bit with Stiffy as well. I did a bit of work with Stiffy over the years. And probably not as much in the last couple of years, but he kind of gave me a bit of an insight into psych, and I kind of went along that. And basically it's just about being happy with yourself. That's the biggest one, I think. And if you can find that, then I think you're on your way.
Well, I'm thinking during the course of your career, from what we've spoken in the past and what I know of you, that your international portion of your career, Gran Canaria, that would have been the highlight, your time spent there.
For sure. They all had different parts that I loved. You know, I land in Athens as a 21-year-old and get handed a bag full of cash and go and play basketball. Pretty happy with that. go hide it in the shelf somewhere so no one can find it.
A few of your teammates will say you've still got that same bag of cash.
I don't reckon they would somehow. That was day one, and that was hilarious. I get off this plane and a little man at the airport, I'm speaking English, we jump in a car, he's pumping all Queen's greatest hits. He obviously loved Queen. He drove me in a mountain 3 hours somewhere, and I rock up and my team's there and we're sitting around having lunch. And that was my first exposure to the, you know, overseas professional life. It was get told this is what's going on. So, and I've always kind of went about that way. But, I was lucky enough to bounce around through Greece, through Turkey. I loved playing in Turkey, had some good seasons there. Over to Lithuania, which was probably my biggest, probably payday. I got paid quite well there to play in the EuroLeague. That was an experience playing in that competition, playing against some of the best players in the world and touring around, you know, big cities, Moscow, Athens, all those big places to play big games in front of big crowds. And from there, I ended up in the Spanish League, which was always my, you know, that's the best domestic league, I guess, outside the NBA. I know the people at the NBL hate me for saying that. But
they hate it when they hear the truth.
Well, the Spanish League was very strong. And to be an import in that league for almost 5 years, I hang my hat on and, move over to the Canary Islands to a team that had been on the borderline of relegation for a couple of years and go there. And, you know, we go into a semi-final my first season and make finals every year there. And we play in a Copa del Rey final, Euro Cup final. You know, it's a pretty special place for me. And I broke down when I left. I thought, you know, when leaving Europe was kind of like the end of my career. But, you know, I got to start again when I came back to Australia. So, yeah, very lucky to play those years there. And great memories from Gran Canaria. Obviously, my daughter being born there. And I rocked up there with one suitcase, came home with five suitcases, a wife and a kid. So, yeah, that was a pretty good place for me.
Oh, jeez. Really was. Well, I believe you're going back there. That's sort of why I asked the question, because of the fact that you're heading there for a short time.
Yeah, so the new president was a teammate of mine in his last year there. And when I left, he said, don't worry, there's always a home here for you and you'll be welcome back one day. And this year is the 60th anniversary of the club. And if you follow their socials, they've been slowly bringing out their old favourite imports and players. It's always been a bit of an import-heavy team because the locals, they were okay, but all the best locals would go to the best Spanish team, so they relied on the foreign players a little bit. And I think that's what they really enjoyed about me, is I really immersed myself in the Spanish life. Like, I didn't really hang out too much with the foreigners. I was more with the locals and were trying to learn things about their life and culture. And I felt if I got in with them, I'd be always in with the team. And I try to do that everywhere I played and learn a lot of good life things. Didn't learn a lot of Spanish, but enough to survive. But, so basically he asked me if I wanted to come back over. And I thought, oh, gee, this is pretty soon. Like, I've just retired from here. And you know, it's kind of, I guess, a bit of a retirement tour for me and the family, because we're all going over and the club's putting us up, and yeah, we're pretty excited about it, and we're on a plane tomorrow night.
Fantastic.
That is awesome. And I was going to ask, do you catch up with old teammates? Because if you listen to our pod that we had from you the first time, you spoke so highly of your time overseas. Are you catching? I mean, you obviously one ex-mate, but is there other teammates going to be there?
Well, two of my teammates are working for the club now. One's a coach and one's in the academy. One's a president. The American boys probably won't be there. They're based in the States now, just through their work commitments and stuff. A couple other guys. One guy's a commentator now, but he's in Madrid, and he's like, come to Madrid. I was like, I'm a little bit hamstrung. So it's not up to me where I am. I'm actually flying to Barcelona first to see my old coach and an old teammate there for a couple of days. And it's going to be really fun. We're actually going to go to the village where they're from. So we're actually going to get a bit of that good experience, not necessarily just hanging in the city. So I'm excited about that. See a little bit of the Catalan way of life before we get over to the Canaries. And there's a few other guys on the island I'm looking forward to seeing too. So, yeah, there'll be plenty of people that I connected with in my time there. You know, Beth, our daughter, will get to see where she was from. And that'll be fun. I think the supporters are looking forward to seeing her. She was only three when she left, and now, you know, she's a 10-year-old girl, and she's going about her journey now. And, you know, Charlie gets to go on a plane overseas. He's been a Tassie, that's as far as he's been, so he's pretty pumped up on him. He just looked at me and gave me a thumbs up, so he's mini Arthur, this bloke, so he's pretty excited.
Are you coming back to Frankston Blues again? I mean, I thought you were doing...
Yeah, I've started the season, yeah. My training habits probably aren't what they were, but we had a tough doubleheader on the weekend. We had a game at home versus... the Diamond Valley. Then we jumped on a bus down to the old Mount Gambier, where I hadn't been since state camp. So that was a bit of fun. They got a nice facility down there. Pity the result didn't go very well. So I was a bit grumpy in that game. So, wasn't our best result. But, I'll still continue with Frankston. And, that's been fun. That's kind of been a little bit of a way for me to kind of phase into the more fun side of basketball, you know, the old school, just travelling on a bus and, you know, I guess... Yeah. The perks of professionalism aren't what they quite are in the NBL one, but it's getting better, and it's a bit of fun to hang out with some younger players and give them some insight. And you know, we've got a couple of young imports too. I can teach you about being pros as well.
You'll be certainly helpful there. Let's move forward now. Let's go to Paris. The Boomers will be playing there very soon. There's been an Olympic squad of 22 players that have been named, which obviously means 10's got to be cut. Have you been monitoring much on there? I mean, Spotty and I have spoken. We think there's probably 8 or 9 that pick themselves, but it's not an easy situation for the coaching staff there. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, like probably all former Boomers and Olympians, you do want to keep an eye on the current situation, but just recently they've done a great job of re-engaging a lot of the past players. We had an event earlier last year where we all got together, and that was a lot of fun. There's probably a few guys who missed out, and hopefully they get a chance to be recognised. But I definitely keep an eye on things, and I'm actually a bit dirty. Gorge didn't clear me in the squad, to be honest.
He said he wanted some veterans.
Yeah, well, I saw he came to a practice one day, and I was doing pretty well in the gold squad, and I said, Gorge, what do you reckon, mate? And he just laughed because he spends a bit of time in Melbourne. And yeah, we got a good relationship. But yeah, the team, it's going to be interesting. Like, I kept an eye on the team from the previous worlds, and you know, we probably struggled a little bit in some areas where I think some guys can give us some input in, and I think it lacked a little bit of that. There's always passion when you play for Australia, but there's just that little bit of extra mongrel and grit, I think. And, you know, with the NBA now, the way it is, the guys play every other day and you kind of get another chance. Whereas with an Olympic schedule, you blow one game, that's almost it for you. So that I think that needs to be factored in when they come into the selection of the team, and I guess the way the guys prepare. And, yeah, it's something we all talk about. Yeah, how do we maintain a little bit, because we're so elite now with our NBA players. How do we keep that? How do they keep that identity of being together, and which I think will always be there, but how important it just is every game. You can't just take one off. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see the makeup of the team, you know, whether they go guys who are playing a lot, form carries over. But by the time July rolls around, you know, that's been a bit of an off-season then by most guys as well. So, yeah, I'm not sure. You know, who knows? It might be an old-school, you know, camp. whoever camps best gets the pick. And that's how it used to be. So I'm sure those last positions will be judged on that for sure.
I got a two-part question for you in relation to the Olympics. The first one is, how tough is our group just to get out of, given that we've already got the World Cup bronze medalists in Canada, and the other two likely teams are going to be Spain and Slovenia? So just that's the first question. Like, how hard will it be to get out of that? Second part was, as a former boomer and a multiple Olympian, how thrilled were you when they won the bronze medal in Tokyo? So you can answer either one of those first.
Yeah, I'll go the first one. So this is gonna sound a little bit crazy what I'm about to say, but well, it's not crazy. So it's actually like, now we've done it, we've gone and won the medal, it's easier to medal at an Olympics than a World Cup, because you're not dealing with as many you've got powerhouse teams, but you're playing less games. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All of a sudden, you wheel yourself into a quarterfinals and you get a win there. You're playing in a final four, whereas in a World Cup, there's a lot more games and less stronger teams. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, whereas our group at this Olympics is like seriously tough. There's probably no shoo-in games, which we have had in the past campaign. So getting out of the group, I mean, you look at Canada, that's an NBA team pretty much. Slovenia's got arguably one of the best players in the world, and Spain is a powerhouse. If it is Spain, of course, because that's to be played for, right? Sure. That's in the qualification. But I just think with the way this Olympics is and the depth of it, if you can just get into a quarters, I think it's an open slather. I mean, the US look like they're going to bring a pretty strong team. So if you can avoid them, if you can avoid them somehow, so you want to be top 1-2, which is pretty obvious, but if you can avoid them, get yourself into a quarter, I think, you're a serious chance at a medal.
Right. And so when they won...
Nothing groundbreaking there. Sorry.
What were you doing when they won that? Like, you would have been watching, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was in lockdown in Sydney. And I'd stayed up to watch. And it was a little bit like, I was so happy for them. And there's obviously a lot of guys who'd played in Olympic campaigns, and there's been a bit of commentary about going into those Olympics. The guys were like there for just to be there and that kind of stuff. And that annoyed me a little bit, because that wasn't true at all. Like, we'd always gone in to try and win medals. We just didn't have good tournaments. We had an inexperienced team for probably basically from 2004 through 2012 almost. 2016 was all just guys who'd only been to one, two Olympics. Whereas the team that eventually got that fourth in Sydney, I think majority of the guys have been to four or five Olympics. Yeah. And it's no coincidence that the team that, you know, finally got through to that medal game was guys, your main guys had been to, I think, four Olympics by then, or three, whatever it was. And we had a pretty inexperienced team. So we basically had to, like, not tread water, but we were batting probably a bit above average for a while there to get to where we got to. And we got a couple eighths or sevenths, whatever you want to call it. So to go close, and then obviously I didn't get to play in Rio, and we got a fourth there. That was pretty emotional seeing him get a fourth. I was pretty happy for him. So to go to the next level on and get the bronze was awesome to see. And I'm so happy for those guys. And a lot of those guys are my close friends. And I rang them during their party, which was funny, and on FaceTime, seeing the celebrations. And look at a guy like Matt Nielsen. He was at me with a couple of those campaigns, and he missed out on a medal as a player, and finally he was a part of the staff, and I was very happy for him. And it's great for the sport, and to get recognised. Like, we've always had good teams, and I guess when you're at those Olympics, everyone talks about the medalists. You're only serious if you win a medal, and now that the basketball is all of a sudden a part of that talk again, it's pretty cool, and I'm really happy for the guys, and just happy for the sport.
Yeah, I agree. And Maddie, I mean, I texted him as well, obviously, former teammate of mine. It was just so happy when you see that. Mate, I'm going to throw some names here, and hopefully it's not going to be too confusing, but I've got 10 players personally that are automatic picks, right? So I'm going to throw those 10, and then we're going to see, and I want your opinion on a couple. So I've got Josh Giddey, Dante Exum, Josh Green, Xavier Cooks, Jock Landale, Paddy Mills, Dyson Daniels, Matisse Thybulle, Duoc Reef, and Joe Ingles. To me, they're automatic selections. Now, mm-hmm. out of the, if you say 13, because obviously we've got Jock Landale going, but he got injured going to the Worlds. And then obviously Jack White was in that. You had Chris Golding, Nick Kay, mm-hmm. who I haven't announced. And there's mm-hmm. a lot of young guys in there, but I don't want to go through everyone because we'll be here for hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think Dele gets in there? Do you think Will McDowell, White, Will Magnay, Jack McVay, who are the next two? Firstly, do you agree with the top 10?
Yeah, your 10's pretty close to what I would be thinking. Sorry, my daughter's just interrupting.
That's good. Welcome to retired life.
She just wants to know where her mum is. So I don't know. She's put her out. with that, I guess traditionally, what do you go seven kind of guard wings and five bigs? Do you go eight and four? Like that's kind of the – and I guess we've got a bit of a luxury of some of our – bigs can play a little bit of wing too. Like they're like four, three, four, five kind of combos. I think. Did you name Cooks, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So he kind of fills that 4-5. Reef, Jock. That's your three. That's three bigs.
Yep.
Who you could play Ingles potentially as like a four and a half.
Yeah.
And like he defends, he still defends quite well. So you can switch with him. They do a lot of switching with the team. I don't know if that's how they want to stay. And I guess, your question around like I just spent a year with Dele, and he is the hungriest guy in Australian basketball to put that jersey back on, man. And I was so proud of what he did for us in the finals this year. Like without him, I don't think we were in a couple of those games. He just took it to another level and. He's just that desperate to play. And I think he brings a bit of that stuff I was talking about earlier about the desperation of every game. And I think that's him to a T. And I think if you have him on your roster, it's infectious. And that's why I think there's definitely a spot for him.
Okay.
Just through that.
Go on.
No, that's good. Do you take Chris Golding then?
Well, that's – see him and, like, they're two of my – like, Chris is probably one of my best mates. I do believe there's a spot there for him in the way he can stretch the floor and shoot the three ball. But I think the question is he going to be used? You know what I mean? Like he kind of sat there.
The World Cup.
For the World Cup. And like I'm not trying to discredit the style of play or anything, but he was a little bit injured going into it. You know, this time he'll be fresh. So he's just had a fantastic NBL campaign. And like I said, like his role, like internationally, you know, you're not really – The threes aren't really posting up like they used to. The small forward now is like a third guard. So I don't think there's such an issue. Like you're not going to like mask him or anything on defense or anything like that. I think, with his outside shooting, I think he's definitely with an absolute chance of making the team. It's probably out of him and Daniels, would you say? I don't know. You know, where's Daniels at right now? I know he's back from his injury. And Dyson, once again, he probably brings a little bit of element of Dele in him, like the defensive side, but probably not the experience, I would imagine. So, it's probably those three spots, probably those three guys, I reckon.
No, good stuff. Okay, mate, quick one, what we're going
to do. Quick retrospective now before we go. We want to just ask you a couple of questions. We're not going to go through the names this time around, but we'll just ask you, I think, Brad, what was your toughest? Or
I want to ask just a couple of things. First one that comes to mind when I say this, greatest teammate.
Oh, man. I had a lot of teammates. I think I had like 60 when I was in Sydney alone in that 5-year period. There's a serious turnover. I'm trying to think, man. Well, there was probably one guy, I think I mentioned him before. His name was Albert Oliver. He was a Spanish point guard. He never played for the national team, but he played till he was about 41, 42. And he was – I really enjoyed playing with him just because we had a really good connection, like just – on and off the court, like I try to teach him a bit of English. He tried to teach me a bit of Spanish, and I don't know where we got to, but just and our wives got along, and like his period where he was with me in Gran Canaria, the team had success, and probably he's right up there. Like, and just a real nice person. Like he had a very calm approach to it all, and he's not a super name. You probably never really heard of him, but like he means a lot in my world. And you know, hopefully I'll be seeing him. I should see him. He's part of the staff next week, but he was a great guy to play with, and just a good smart basketball player. I learned things off by watching him, and a little bit of his off court role. Like I was probably a bit of a loose cannon when I was younger, and he looked after himself and just seeing that kind of tweaked a little bit for me of how to prolong your career a little bit. And, you know, following him was a good thing. And there are guys like Matty Nielsen, they stand out. Like, I had a lot of fun with Matty on Olympic teams, and, you know, he was always a fun. Glenn Saville, they were like my seniors when I first got into that program. And Johnny really taught me a lot too, as far as older players were. And, you know, the list kind of goes on, and, you know, there'll be a lot of players I probably haven't named, but probably those three, four. The guys who are always a bit older than me stand out.
Right. I got a quick one. Your toughest opponent, is there anyone that springs to mind that when you walked on the floor you thought, oh, geez, not him?
Yeah, well, like, the ones who I had to deal with, obviously playing for Australia, were like your big name, like Kobe Bryant's, LeBron James's, Manu. Like, I've always said Manu Ginobili was the hardest guy I've ever guarded. Right. Just because he was so good at both ends of the – but the both styles of basketball, I guess, NBA and the FIBA game. Carlos Delfino, actually, his teammate. Andreas Nocioni was another one I played against a lot in Spain. He was tough as well. But as far as, like, you know, night to night, every week in the NBL, early days it was probably Sav, because we were similar positions. Yeah. And Sav and Sammy McKinnon, they were both kind of more – they were a bit older than me, and that was the position I was kind of coming into. So at a younger player, dealing with them wasn't easy. And then kind of when I came back to the NBL, you know, Bryce Cotton was always a handful. I didn't spend a lot of time directly on him, but, yeah, he was always a problem to work your defensive systems around, as far as, you know, my time here in Australia. And, you know, Chris Golding, I matched up on him a lot when I played for the Kings. He's a good mate of mine now, on the same team I was, but he was always a tough matchup too. And, you know, these kind of guys over the years were very hard to deal with. And yeah, that's probably my kind of guys domestically and internationally.
Hey, Brad, we could go on for hours. You're just a legend to talk to, but just loved everything you brought today. I did listen back to our pod that we had the first time, and it was great to hear, you know, all about the overseas stuff and life and basketball and why you came back to the Kings and NBL, and then to see you go five seasons there, another three with Sydney and with Melbourne, and 327 games. You are an outstanding bloke. But an unbelievable basketballer for what you've done for Australia. And like I said, your 10 years overseas is unbelievable, mate. Thank you so much for joining us. I don't want to say wish you well every time, because it's like we're not going to speak to you again, mate. But I can't wait to see you around. I can't wait to see you around the NBL.
Have a great trip.
Yeah, absolutely. Trip. Fantastic trip to Spain. And thanks again, mate. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, just don't forget about me, guys. No, appreciate it. Appreciate the chat. And, all your support over the years. Body wrote a lot of nice articles about me, and appreciate your kind words.
Jeez, you're lucky. You didn't write crap about me.
Yeah. It's who you know, mate.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not those Sydney blokes. Brad, all the best, mate. Safe travels and lots
appreciate
of
it.
To the family.
Thanks, Brad. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Cheers, mate. What are you talking about, Rose? And I wrote about you. That time you got knocked out, I said that was the most time you'd spent on the court in a month.
Yeah.
I'm done here, guys, right?
Yeah.